FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's Gary Lutz. The date is January 27th, 2016. Lot of volatility in the markets, a lot of economic turmoil, especially since the beginning of the year. We saw petroleum go down to below $30 the barrel in the $27 range. It's popped up a bit now, but confusion. So goes oil, so goes the world economy. Well, let's think about that. And while we're thinking about it, we've got Mickey Fallpon with us. And you know him well, the mercenary geologist. You find him at mercenarygeologist.com. And Mickey, glad we got together today.
Yeah, we've been trying to get together for a chat about the oil market. We're finally getting it done. And as you say, oil spent 4 days below 30 bucks last week. It closed on a week ago today at 26.55, it's since bounced. Right now I'm looking at $32 and change, and that looked like a bottom to me. Who knows? It wouldn't surprise me if it's tested again, but it's very reminiscent to me of the way the bottom happened in the global economic crisis. It went to $30 and it immediately bounced at that point. So hopefully we've seen the bottom. And as you say, as so goes oil, so goes the world economy, or maybe vice versa. The world's economy has been slowing down, which has lessened oil demand worldwide. And it's resulted in about a 2% glut on a daily basis.
And it really isn't that much. I read somewhere that the total inventory, excluding countries' strategic petroleum reserves, is somewhere around 1.2 billion barrels, and plus whatever is floating around on the ocean at any given time. So let's say that it's a billion and a half barrels. It's barely a 10-day supply at the rate of consumption, which is now somewhere around 95 million barrels per day.
Well, you're very correct. And even in the U.S., which is approaching all-time record inventories, just shy last week of a half a billion barrels, 500 million barrels. Do the math on that, and that's you know, we're using somewhere 18 million barrels a day or something like that. So that's less than a month. Now, for commodities, a month of inventory is huge. So there's little doubt that we have a lot of oil. We have more oil than we're using right now, and that's certainly reflected in the price. Some of the other things, you know, we've got a much weaker Chinese yuan, other countries, third world countries in, scattered around the globe, their currencies are even more weak compared to the U.S. dollar. Where do we go from here? I hope up and up. You know, it's kind of interesting to me. U.S. imports have increased 10% year over year. All that, although U.S. use has gone down a bit. So all that has been heavy oil coming into refineries in the Gulf and the left coasts. And that may have something to do with the ramping up of those refineries, as now we've gotten congressional approval and Obama signed into law, and you can now export oil in the U.S. for the first time in over 40 years.
Hallelujah. Well,
yeah, hallelujah. And interesting enough, Kerry, as soon as that happened, this arbitrage we've seen between WTI and Brent crude immediately evaporated.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a bit of an arbitrage today. But not very much. I think 15 cents difference between Brent and WTI.
Amazing. And we've been talking about how do you play that arbitrage for years. There wasn't any way to play it, but now this was kind of like a black swan for the industry. And Really, the ban on export of U.S. crude goes back to the Alaskan pipeline. When that was finished, there was a glut of oil in the U.S., and we were sending a whole bunch of it over to Japan, which makes complete sense. So we're exporting to Japan because the glut was on the West Coast, and we're importing in the East Coast. And somehow this became some type of chauvinistic issue, and Congress, in its finite wisdom, banned exports. And no reason for it. They just did it. And here we are 30 some odd years later, almost 40 years later.
Wow, over 40.
Over 40?
Okay. Yeah, I think this ban was initiated, if memory serves, right after the first oil embargo of 1974-75. If my memory is,
yeah,
is
you're
not
right.
Foggy, it was, yeah. It may even have occurred when Nixon was still president.
So, oh, Nixon. God. Was he president?
It was really
was he president?
Nixon. It was really tied in to the idea that of the oil embargo, and we had to protect U.S. oil reserves and production from those nasty guys in the Middle East who are cutting off our oil. So anyway, regardless. That was too long ago, and it's done. It's a done deal now. Yahoo, hello to light crude exports, and we can continue to feed our heavy refineries, especially in the Gulf Coast with Venezuelan and Mexican oil.
Yeah, well, an idea that long since outlived its time, like so much that your government does, kind of like that tax on your telephone bill to finance the Spanish-American War, which stuck with us for so long. And finally, I think court had to get rid of it. But, you know, this is the danger when government makes policies and doesn't periodically review them and revise them. And we wind up with something like this. And finally, everybody agreed it outlived its usefulness.
Yeah. And, you know, the world production, we thought with these lower oil prices, it would bring production off. It has to a bit in the U.S. U.S. hit its all-time record production of almost 13 million barrels a day. We are by far the world's largest producer now. About 2.5 million barrels more than the Saudis per day. And the Russians are probably somewhere 11.5 million a day. But we peaked in Q3. Projections are that that'll go down 0.5 million barrels a day this year. But what's really happened is the prices have gone down. There's so many banana republics, and they're not quite banana republics. They're black gold republics. Who are totally dependent on their revenues from oil. And so everybody in the world that I know of, and I would hope someone would correct me, but every major producer in the world increased production last year, all the way from China, Russia, the Saudis, U.S., Mexico, Venezuela, Iran, Iraq, Nigeria, Algeria, Brazil, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The only one I can find that cut production last year was Libya, and that's an infrastructure problem with the ongoing civil war. So we went from 91 million barrels a day in Q4 of 2014 year over year, now 94 plus million barrels a day. So these low prices have generated more and more oil production, and i.e. therefore the price has gone down to low $30 a barrel.
Hey, and it makes total sense that production initially increases when the price goes down, because what the black gold republics, as you call them, and other major producers are attempting to do is increase production to offset the decline in revenues, and really it just winds up producing
exacerbating
the
situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's what we've been stuck with.
If I can put a couple words in your mouth.
Yeah. Hey, I'll I will definitely go with that. And hey, look, there's just It's a worldwide global market, and while it appears to be irrational at times, it's really not. And look what's happening, Mickey, in Canada.
I was just thinking about that as you said it, Kerry.
North Dakota.
I'm in Canada.
I know.
I'm sitting in my office in Vancouver looking out on the usual gray sky, but I saw that the oil sands are averaging $17 a barrel right now. You know, those guys can't ramp up and ramp down because they're essentially mining stuff.
Fixed operation.
But those poor guys, the Canadian dollar briefly dropped below 70 cents last week as crude dropped. We're working on a deal right now. We should have it out in the next couple of weeks on correlation coefficients of oil and the Canadian dollar. Canadian dollar is up to 71 cents today with a recovery in oil. But the poor Canadians, my God, being an American with a second residence here, it's time for me to go shopping on Robson Street again.
Hey, well, and what's happening in North Dakota, you know, my good friend, Dr. Frack, he can get work in Saudi Arabia, in South Africa, believe it or not, and a couple of other foreign locales, but he really doesn't feel like at this point in his career, he's been at it for 25 years. He's been to dozens of countries. He doesn't want to go back overseas, and there's basically nothing here for him in the U.S. Very difficult job situation. The layoffs, Halliburton and others that took place in the past couple of days, I mean, it's really tough out there if you're a leatherneck.
Yeah, well, look at drill rigs down to pushing 600 rigs drilling in the U.S. At the peak, we were at 1,900 plus. Little more than a year ago, rig counts peaked in the U.S., stayed kind of flat from about August till December of last year, somewhere around 1,900 rigs. So, you know, that will come to bear at some point. You know, it's we're starting to see that in the U.S. But, you know, the shale oil guys, unless they're burdened with debt and a lot of fly-by nights are, this is going to generate lots of takeovers and M&A activity at some point. But the shale oil producers only probably need $40-$45 a barrel on average to break even or generate some sort of, let's say their net back starts at $40-$45 a barrel. So they're not that far away. Lots of wells have been drilled and not fracked. So Dr. Frank Frackenstein or Frackenstein, whatever you call the man. I'm sure he's going to be back in business here in not too long.
Oh, I know. And what do we always say? The best cure for low prices in commodities is low prices. And everyone seems to forget that, but we know that it works.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is the time to go bottom fishing for oil companies. You know, I think as usual that the big boys will lead the parade out of this. So, you know, maybe it's time to take a look at a couple of these big majors whose prices are pretty well beaten down. Make sure they're not overly burdened with debt, and the recovery will happen. They're going to snatch up lots of good distressed assets, and oil will be king again, Kerry. Oil runs the world. I think we're probably in agreement with that, and
we are. But
it's not going to go away soon.
No,
the idea of peak oil once again. The Malthusians have taken it in the shorts, and the cornucopians like myself rule. You know, we were talking earlier about the days when peak oil was at 80 million barrels a day, and here we're producing 90, 94, producing 96 a day, I guess, and
at
using
least
94. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
what you said to me before when we were talking, one thing is a constant. The world's population keeps increasing. And therefore, what does that do for oil automatically?
It increases demand. You know, there's 85 million more people on the planet every year. Mm-hmm. Their mouths have to be fed. They have to be clothed. They have to be sheltered. Increasingly, they want electricity. And, you know, it's all about oil. It's not going to go away. The idea that we're going to run out, 70% of all the oil we've ever discovered remains in the ground, waiting for the economics to make it extractable. We have 550 million years of accumulation of organic sediments, and our oil supply is essentially unlimited. It just depends on the cost of getting it out of the ground.
Hey, and I will also point to statistic. Last year's Chinese auto sales, 21.15 million. I don't know how many of them were Teslas or Chevy Volts or Bolts or Toyota Priuses. I don't think that many. And hey, look, obviously electric cars are going to increase, and I'm a big proponent of them for a number of reasons, not really having to do with oil. I think they're more efficient and less moving parts, and there's just a lot of good things about them, but they're not there yet. How soon will it be?
Well, not only that, but they have a bigger carbon footprint than your average gasoline guzzling SUV in the U.S. Yeah. There's a seminal study done about a year ago by at the University of California, Davis, which has a dedicated school to assess carbon footprints, a group of people there, and they unequivocally showed that an electric vehicle has a larger carbon footprint than my gas-guzzling Lincoln Town Car or F-250. So,
well, I don't really know what the heck a carbon footprint is. I've felt that that is a scam from the get-go. And I've got, there's one thing that I get really nasty emails about, Mickey, is, you know, the whole climate change thing. It's changing. But
it's a religion.
Yeah.
And, you know, let them do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, for anybody interested, send me an email at contact@mercenarygeologist.com, and I will be glad to forward this study by the professors at UC Davis. I think it's compelling.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's going to be a while before electric cars become ascending. Right now, it's a very small niche, but I do believe it will expand, if nothing else, because the government is forcing them to do it.
Well, Obama's forcing it. We'll see what happens if we get a Republican president. We won't go any further into that.
No politics. This is a family show.
Right, exactly. But you know, those green credits may not be around very long. So
Well, that's the point. The market has to support this, not the world's governments on some misguided motivation towards saving the earth. But for another day, Mickey, after like looking at the state of the industry, looking at worldwide demand, U.S. demand, which is down a bit from its peak, certainly in gasoline, what conclusions do you draw from what's happening now and where it's going in the future?
Well, I think we're in still for a bit of a rough spot here. I don't see the end in sight for oil prices. Like I said, I think it bottomed, but I probably said that at low 40s a couple of times. You know, the world economy, you look at the U.S. markets, this is just a correction so far. You know, there's been some blood and panic and angst in the street, but do the math, we're looking at a 12, 13% decline in the Dow, not much more than that in the NASDAQ, S&P 500, about the same, maybe even a little less, 10%. So 10 to 15% correction, that's not a collapse of the markets. We thought that correction was way overdue. In this case, I think it's driven by the price of oil in some regard. But let's just make it through the tough time and look for distressed assets or distressed companies that are at their historic lows and snatch them up and sit back and wait. Be a contrarian.
So in other words, death of the world economy and the world stock markets is greatly exaggerated, huh?
Well, at this point, you know, I'm reading a very interesting book right now called The Great Crash of 1929, and it's John Kenneth Galbraith. And I've never read this book, and his perspective on it, 25 years after it happened, quite an intriguing book. And so I think I'll learn something about recessions and depressions, et cetera.
Yeah, well, hey, you can never learn enough because they're with us to stay. And every boom ends in a bust, and probably this one will be no different. But on that note, Mickey, hey, we will talk to you again soon. Just give us all your websites and how we follow you on the web.
MercenaryGeologist.com, at MercenaryGeo is the Twitter feed. As always, our interviews go on mercenarygeologist.fm. And Kerry, I will talk to you in about 4 or 5 days with the monthly market wrap.
Yeah, which, by the way, we're getting like 15, 20,000 people listening to that monthly wrap.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, it's...
When markets get volatile and people get nervous, our listenership goes way up. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, funny how that works. I've noticed past couple of weeks, 25, 30% more of you are listening, which is a good thing because you need to stay informed in these uncertain times and volatile markets. Mickey, we will talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.